brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. On this episode of Sips, Suds, and Smokes, for Yardage Whiskey, Jazz Beer, and the Italians Make What? We have a sip segment today with Corsair Quinoa Whiskey, Corsair Rasputin, and Balcones Rumble, recorded live on site at the Bottle Shop in Franklin, Tennessee. Next up is a Suds segment, recorded also live at Craft Brewed in Nashville, Tennessee. Dogfish My Antonia, Beer de Borga in a My Antonio collaboration taste off. Dogfish Bitches Brew and Samuel Adams New Albion Pale Ale. Enjoy the show. And now it's sippin' time. Hello, this is good old boy Mike, and this is your sip segment for today. Today we are having our sip segment recorded live on site at the Bottle Shop in Franklin, Tennessee. Today we're going to be tasting three whiskeys. Corsair Quinoa Whiskey, Corsair Rasputin, and Balcones Rumble is what we're going to go through today. Joining me for this tasting are good old gal Lisa.
Hello.
And good old boy Ollie.
Hey.
If you haven't noticed our sips tastings lately, I'll go through these with you briefly. Number one is give me a glass of water to wash out my mouth.
Water. Bring water. Bring water.
Number two is nice, but what else do you
have? Well, isn't that nice?
Number three is, interesting. What was that again? Number four is, let's keep this secret to ourselves. Pour me another.
That's classified.
And number five is everyone's favorite. Oh, my. I was unaware anything could be this good.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. 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 Yes.
So those are our sips ratings here on Sips, Suds, and Smokes. Really looking forward to checking out all of these whiskeys here in front of us today. Very different that, you know, each one of these, you know, that we've tasted here today. So how about it going into it? Had you had either one of these?
I must confess, I had had all.
Ah, okay. How about you, Ollie? Had you tasted any of these?
I have before, except for the Rasputin.
Ah, okay. Well, so this is not a double blind or blind tasting. I'll confess I've not had any of these, you know, prior to our conversation today, but very interesting products, each and every one of them. We have actually tasted some Corsair products, you know, here on the show before, and in fact, the Triple Smoke got our highest rating, which was 5, and I've been looking forward to tasting other products from Corsair. So Corsair is made in Nashville, Tennessee, right? Yep, and the Balcones is out of Texas, is that right?
Waco, Texas.
Waco, Texas.
Yard-aged.
Yard-aged, and we'll talk about what that means in just a moment. All right, so first up is the Corsair Quinoa Whiskey. Very interesting product, and, you know, the first thing that caught my mind, or my attention, was the word quinoa. I mean, that just is not a grain that you tend to ever utilize, you know, in making anything, let alone whiskey. I'm sure there'll be plenty of people that butcher the name of that as well. But I think even seeing the word quinoa on any bottle of liquor will have people go, I don't know what that is. I ain't think I'm going to get that. Is that a rye or what is that? You know, I ain't heard no quinoa before. So, I mean, it is an underlying grain, and it is actually a native grain, I believe, to North America, if I'm not...
South America.
South America. There you go, Ollie. I'm glad you're the grain expert here at the
actually,
table.
A super grain.
Yep, definitely. Well, it was very interesting. So my tasting notes around the quinoa whiskey were, you know, it's very harsh right up front. It was kind of rye-like, you know, but sweet and very different. You know, it was definitely, I'm glad that they went out on the ledge and made this. I'm sure it was, you know, not a very difficult task for the distiller working with some unusual products. So my sips rating for the quinoa Corsair whiskey is going to be 3, which is interesting. Was that, what was that again? So, all right, good old boy Ollie, what'd you think of Corsair quinoa whiskey?
I'm going to give it a 3, three
ooh,
also.
A 3 as well. Interesting. What was that again?
You know, on that one, it was just the alcohol content was kind of hot, and it kind of burned my throat just a touch. So drinking...
I think we've heard that several times now, you know, so I think that that is a very consistent, you know, tasting note. Is it does. It kind of catches you right at the front. So.
And it's hanging. I've got a... It's lingering. The flavors of it are really hanging out in the throat.
What else do you think of it?
I think it'd be great in a Manhattan or a mixed cocktail. But by itself, I couldn't see myself sitting down and drinking some of this on ice, on the rocks, or with water. But I think in a Manhattan or another fanciful cocktail, I think it'd be pretty darn good.
Yep. Well, so very interesting out of the chute to start with the quinoa whiskey. So next up is going to be another Corsair product called Rasputin. I don't really know what they were aiming for here, I think, is, you know, the first thing that, that I thought. You know, it's just kind of a, it's a little harsh. You know, it's this very interesting sweet finish, you know, on it as well. And I don't know that I would really come back to it again. You know, it, I think there are a lot of other whiskey products I would probably, you know, go after. That, but interesting. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see where this was in their distillation schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sneaky feeling that this was the one that was up first, and I think that they were kind of refining, you know, a bit of what they wanted to do in terms of a flavor profile. So I'm betting that this was like one of the very first runs that they did. But maybe this is what they were aiming for. Didn't quite do it for me, so my sips rating for this is going to be 3. Interesting. What was that again? But you know, I look forward to, you know, a lot more Corsair products as well. Good old gal Lisa, what did you think of the Corsair Rasputin?
Well, I am very again intrigued by that they've sort of taken a unique approach, so always a fan of that. I'm still going to give it a 3, but a lot of that is because of the
interesting. A 3. Interesting. What was that again?
The creativity. And I think I mentioned earlier I'm starting to see in some, I hate this, but first tier markets, I think we're considered a second tier in terms of distribution or something. Those markets where things get launched, you're seeing some hopped products, including vodkas and some whiskey. So I think it's great that, you know, our neighbors are cutting edge, doing something, you know, unique. I thought it was a little bit smoky. Agreed with you, it's a little bit harsh. It had almost like a charred citrus effect. Like I once had a bruleed grapefruit, and it kind of reminded me a little bit of that.
I don't think I've ever heard the word grapefruit in whiskey, you know, ever before. I don't think those are tasting terms I would ever use in a favorable way in talking about whiskey as citrus at all. So, charred grapefruit. You know, do you think that this feels like a throwback whiskey? You know, is it going back in time and saying, you know, I think that we're kind of go back to the style of whiskeys that were made, you know, back in the 40s. You know, this reminds me of like some very early Jim Beam or maybe some and I know I just named a bourbon and we're tasting whiskey, but
It does remind me of a flavor profile, I think, within that period of time, though, mm-hmm. that I think everybody was going for. So maybe right. that's what...
Yeah, that really new charred barrel before everyone got it perfected, too.
And grapefruit.
And grapefruit, know? Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely
does. Native Tennessee grapefruit.
That definitely doesn't work. All right. Good old boy, Ollie, what'd you think of the Corsair Rasputin?
I like the fact that they're kind of stepping outside the mold and trying some different things in this one, but I'm going to have to give it a 2.
Ooh.
Well, isn't that
nice? Nice, but what else do you have?
Something about it. It's just maybe a little too...
A little too throwbackish for you?
Yeah, probably so. A little too different. Just didn't sit well. I don't know if I could mix it with something. I don't know if I can enjoy it in a Manhattan and...
Well, you know, I think that's a good point. I think this would be something that, if I threw it in with something else, like a mixer, mm-hmm. I think that it would blend really well with something else. So, absolutely, I agree. If mm-hmm. you threw it in a sidecar, I have whiskey in it, I believe it does, mm-hmm. Or cognac.
Yeah.
But I agree that I think that if this were in a blended drink, this would be great. You
or
know?
What's it called when you do the whiskey shot in the beer? Is there a Boilermaker?
Yes, that is correct.
You could do some sort of Boilermaker cocktail.
We might do this later. Maybe, you know. I like that.
Rye IPA or not something. Quite, have this in there.
That would be a combination of a sips and a sud segment. That would be a good transition moment, you know. So we'll see how that would go for sure. Anything else about the Rasputin that hit you, Holly?
No.
All right. Well, on we go to the next item we have in today's tasting, which is from Balcones, I want to say. Hopefully I'm not butchering something from Texas called Rumble. It's described as a Texas wildflower honey, tornado sugar, and Mason fig spirit. Could they not add something else here on the label? They missed grass. They missed Texas air and a little bit of tumbleweed, you know, in the name of that. It missed the marketing meaning of saying be brief, be blunt, be quick, you know. So anyway, very interesting product here. This is considered a whiskey. Is that right?
Yes.
And I would say this really has excellent balance to it. I felt that it was very approachable right from the get-go. It was sweet. It was balanced. It had a very nice nose to it. There was just everything was happening, you know, in this glass for me. And so my sips rating for this is actually a 4. Let's keep this secret to ourselves. Pour me another. And I really thought this was something I would probably come back to, great whiskey. Please make more. And so they have a unique, what's it called? You said
yard aging.
Yard aging, yes. Which tells me they put everything in 3-foot barrels, but I'm not really quite sure. So they literally just distill this and they set it out in the open air.
In the backyard.
Backyard.
The proverbial backyard.
And whatever happens, happens.
Oh, my God.
But that's how a lot of spirits, I mean, when you look at some of the dessert wines and, you know, a lot of these things were accidents that have, you know, they discovered that, wow, port or sherry, these things got so much better after being transported. And it was, they were on a ship sitting, you know, exposed to elements. So in a way, it's kind of a throwback to an older method of letting things be more natural and, you know, I guess that it would vary in weather.
Oh, natural whiskey?
Exactly.
Is that what that is down there in Texas? We're just going to let it spread its wings out here in the flatlands. Just let the weather roll on in. Just going to cook on that whiskey barrel for about 4 or 5 years.
Do what it do.
Yep. you know, I actually don't know. Is this in the hill country at all in Texas, or is it in another part of Texas? I don't know where this is.
Waco.
Waco.
Waco
okay.
is... South, east, west
of
Houston? I want to
say Waco's north for some reason.
I think it is, too. I don't think it is hill country.
We don't know crap about geography, but we do like the whiskey.
It's a real big state.
Yeah. All right, so good old gal, Lisa, what do you think of the Balcones Rumbles?
I loved it. And I'm curious if it is actually... if it is a whiskey, we have it with our whiskeys because that's what they make is whiskey. But I wonder if it does, if the labeling is accurate. There's not a mash bill that would indicate that it is a whiskey. So yeah. Maybe it's just a spirit. I don't know. But that said, I think it's an awesome alternative. I think it's really ladylike. I think it's soft and there's a little floral nature to it. I think you could do some cool cocktails. But
I don't think
also...
I've ever heard the word lady whiskey before. But, you know.
Shame on you.
Yeah, but I think that's great.
You know? Mostly a lady. Yes. And I like whiskey.
You know, I just have never heard that. Along with grapefruit. The new tasting terms I'm learning today about whiskey. So, you know, it all works pretty well. So what's your sips rating here for Balcones Rumble?
I gave it a 5.
A 5?
That's classified.
Oh, that's not the 5.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes! Yes!
So it definitely gave you that, oh my, I was unaware anything could be this good. It definitely gave you that feeling.
It's just that unique to me. I don't know if it gave me quite that feeling, but I just thought it was something that I definitely would want to spread the word about. I'd never thought of a whiskey made of those ingredients, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely come back to this, that's for sure. Little boy Ollie, what do you think about Balcones Rumble?
Do you have a 4.5?
No.
Well,
you have ascribed to the good old boy Jim school of let's just cut the numbers in half. No,
it's Southern math,
five,
right?
You know,
so round up, round down.
So you're gonna give it a 4?
I give it a 4.
Let's keep the secret to ourselves. Pour me another. Excellent. So, what else did you think about this?
I'm a big fan of everything that these guys make. I think that they're. I don't know. I think he's pretty much spot on with everything. In this one in particular, I think that Mission Fig spirit really comes out in the finish and really makes it smooth, really rounds it out, doesn't give it that harshness that you'd expect from a whiskey or maybe anything for that matter from Texas. But it's pretty darn good.
Well, I hear a lot of people in Texas really happy about this whiskey for sure. And I think probably whatever comes out of Balcones for probably some period of time will be quite popular as chick whiskey. You heard it first here,
chick
you know,
whiskey.
On Sips, Suds, and Smokes, the chick whiskey. You know,
he says it in the nicest way possible.
I do. At the same time, yeah, people are standing up there applauding us. They're going, thank God, finally we have chick whiskey. You know, we're so happy to finally have chick whiskey. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us here on this segment of Sips, Suds, and Smokes and Sips segment. I want to thank my co-host, good old gal Lisa.
So long.
And good old boy Ollie for joining me.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks
and,
for having me.
And we will ask you to keep on sipping.
Suds. Suds, suds, it's time for more suds.
Hello and welcome to the suds segment for today. This is good old boy Mike. I'm going to go through and tell you a little bit about our suds ratings if you hadn't heard them lately. Our suds ratings are 1 to 5. Number 1 is that sucks, give me anything but a bud. Number 2, was that a belch? Number 3, what a relief. Number 4, a body should really not make that sound. And number 5 is, listen to that hang time, give me another. Today I am joined by Sean.
Hello.
And Chip are my co-hosts for today. And we're going to have a good time going through a number of things. We're going to talk a little bit about collaboration ales, collaboration versus non-collaboration, and through that discussion, we're actually going to taste My Antonio from Dogfish that's been made on two opposite sides of the planet. We're going to talk about Miles Davis Dogfish brew as well, New Albion, and if we have some more time to cover some more topics. So we've kind of been pouring these beers and enjoying them. So, Sean, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
My name's Sean Jewett. I have been a craft beer aficionado for the last 8 years and been a home brewer for the last going on 4 years now.
My name is Chip DeVere. I am the owner of Craft Brewed and just all around beer aficionado.
Excellent. All right, fellas. Well, first up, you know, we fired up Dogfish, My Antonia, and there's been a lot of collaboration brews, and it's really great that folks have been getting together and, you know, collaborating over making beer. There have been some really, really good collaboration brews that I've had, and I thought that this was a very interesting conversation, you know, to pick up and talk about doing a collaboration versus not. And do you make a better beer, you know, when you collaborate with somebody, you know, outside of your own brewery? So without thinking about these beers, I mean, Sean, what do you think about just the concept alone?
Well, I think it's great, and I think it's a reflection of what's happening with the camaraderie ship that is out there with the craft beer scene in the U.S. It's not that they're competing against each other, it's that they're all helping each other, and this is just kind of the next logical conclusion, that they're not only helping each other, they're working together and brewing a beer, sometimes even new beers that we haven't seen before. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, but do you think it makes the beer better at the end of the day, or is this just a marketing gimmick?
Oh, well, it's a good question. Yeah, there is some marketing gimmick to it, but at the same time, too, I think ultimately their heart and souls are poured into these beers, and I think they're making great beer.
Interesting. How about it, Chip? What do you think?
I would agree. I think they're, yeah, it's a marketing ploy, but the camaraderie, like Sean said, it's just phenomenal, and craft brewers in general realize to be successful and sustainable, they've got to form those partnerships to make their voice be heard and further grow their brands and produce better beers.
Yeah. So we've put Dogfish, My Antonia, here on the table to check out for today. So this is a strong pale lager, or near imperial IPA. A little cut in between the two is how they describe this style. And so, you know, the original Dogfish came out a little time ago, and, you know, my first impression was this is a great summer beer. But I'll be honest with you, I bought a lot of it, and I did not drink it all, because, I don't know, just I think as time kept coming by, I don't know, there's just something about it that just didn't have a lot of long-term appeal for me. Then I came back around, and the another version has been brewed through a collaboration in Italy with Birra di Borgo, and so that's the one that's hit the States rather recently. So, I mean, to me, I would probably have given a Suds rating for My Antonia out of the gate at about a 3, which is what a relief. You know, I think part of what was striking me about the original was it was probably a bit too sweet, you know, for me.
Yeah, I think there's a candy-like quality there.
Yeah. So I think that I tend to think of lagers as having a bit more depth and, I don't know, just kind of sharpness to it, you know, as a lager is generally made. A dry, you know, element, a quality to that. But I don't know, there was something about this. It just was hanging out there a little too long on my palate, so that's why I kind of hung it there. So, you know, I shifted to trying the Birra di Borgo, you know, a version of this, and strangely enough, I actually like it better than the original. It doesn't have that same sweetness, you know, on the finish itself, and probably getting a little bit closer to what I would have described as in terms of a lager, you know, for this as well. So I probably would still give it the same rating, which is 3. What a relief. But, you know, I think hands down, you know, probably between the two, I really enjoy the Italian version.
Yeah.
You know, than I do the boys up in Delaware. But, I mean, they're both really great beers, don't get me wrong. But very interesting to, you know, taste two of these side by side. What do you think about it, Sean?
Yeah, I think you're right. The Dogfish Head, there's there's just a little different note on it that is not as pleasing as the Italian version. I think the Italian one has a little bit of a drier finish to it, but I think they're both, like you said, they're very good for the summer. You've got to be in the mood for an Imperial Pils. But we had the Chattanooga Brewing Company Imperial Pils on recently, and there's a lot of the same qualities there, except there's a lot more subtlety in this than versus the Chattanooga one that we had on tap recently. Huh.
So what's your suds rating on the original?
On the original? Three, and I would say 3.5 for the...
No halves?
No halves.
No part two.
I'd say...
Not repeat, you know, good old boy Jim's mistake. It's either a 2 or a 3.
All right. I'd go for a 4 with the Italian version.
A 4? Yeah. A body should really not make that sound. Okay, for the Italian version?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So how about the original? The dogfish
had 3.
A 3, yeah. So I would relieve. Okay, so you're... So they're pretty close in your mind.
Yeah.
But you definitely would pick the Italian version. Do you think that is because it's matching up better with the description of what it should have been and the style, or you just like that beer better?
I like it better. There's a better finish to it. Like I said, it's a little bit drier and, it's just a little more pleasing to the palate.
Hmm. How about it, Chip? What do you think?
I agree with Sean. I think it's a 4.
A 4. Italian. A body should really not make that sound. 4, the Italian version?
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh. Okay. So you both like stuff on the other side of the planet.
I've loved Dogfish Head's beers, but...
I know. Yeah. We have another one we're going to talk about here in a second. So what do you give the original there, Chip?
I'd probably go 3.
A 3. Ooh. Ah, what a relief. Huh. Okay. So you're split... same way that Sean is here as well.
It just seems like with the Italian, there's a little more... There's a little something more to it. Flavor.
Mm. I hear the aroma through the microphone. Just every time I'm going to enjoy it. See, it's a beer. Is it beer or is it a beer?
Crisper nose to it.
And yes, I've insulted all Italians with that horrible accent impersonation. So, you know, I have been to Italy a couple of times, and once. And, I don't believe that I really recall having any beer that I enjoyed, you know, while I was there. I had a lot of wine, a lot of great wine, you know, while I was in Italy, but... as far as other Italian beers here in the U.S., I mean, it's like Peroni and then it falls off the planet.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even...
Moretti's the other one.
Moretti is another Italian. I knew there was probably one or two that are widely distributed here in the U.S., but I'm sorry, you just don't think of going to, you know, the Italians to make a beer, although they know an awful lot about making a lot of good things. That's just probably not, you know, one of the ones that I tend to think about. So
what sparked this collaboration? Do we know? Dogfish Head looking to do something different.
Dogfish has done a lot of collaboration brews, and I like the fact that it does not strike me always as a marketing gimmick. Probably one of the more interesting collaboration brews that I've tasted out of Dogfish was the Saison. That they did, and I'm sorry I can't recall the other two breweries they did it with. Either of you happen to remember?
No, offhand I don't. I just remember there was the black and blue, and then there was the red and white, and both of those were collaborations. If I'm
I don't know if those were collaborations. But Saison was definitely a collaboration, and I'm sorry I can't remember the other two breweries. But every single one of them used the exact same recipe.
Yes, Stone was one of the breweries on that.
That's it.
And then was it Sierra Nevada?
I think you're right. Yeah. I think that's dead on there, Sean. Where the other two, and it was interesting. They all used a similar recipe, and I would say they were three very distinct saisons. And I ended up liking the Stone version. I think out of the three was the one that I really liked. But of course, I love their hops and a lot of stuff, so that's probably the reason why it ran that way. All right. So we actually popped open another Dogfish here, which was the Miles Davis Bitches Brew. Sean, this is a different kind of collaboration, isn't it?
Yes. couple, was it 2 years ago now? It was the 40th anniversary of Miles Davis's album, seminal album, Bitches
and if
for
you don't know who Miles Davis is, please, just cut this episode off. Go listen to the band.
Yeah, go get Kinda Blue, go get Bitches Brew, and enjoy. And so, yeah, as I recall, the story is that Dogfish Head was approached by Sony to do a an anniversary beer for the 40th anniversary, and this is the what Sam and his crew put together. Hmm.
So I've never thought of collaborating music with beer, and again, you know, I love the fact that Dogfish steps out of the box for again and creates a very innovative product. So what is the style of this that they're claiming it is? Because if I would have... It's halfway between a stout and a porter for me.
It's an ale brewed with honey and geisha. Or geisha, I should say.
Huh. Okay. Or ginseng. Is it ginseng?
Wouldn't have guessed that. No, it's G-E-S-H-O.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I won't say that or I'll get a tongue twister really quickly. Well, I'm not quite sure exactly what their declared style is, so I'm going to slap it in
a beer.
What?
Is it a beer?
It's a...
yeah, definitely.
All right. According to the description here, it's the creates a bold, dark beer that's a fusion of the three threads of Imperial Stout. One thread, honey beer with geisha root. And then... then they don't tell you what the other three threads are. The other two threads are.
Mm. So, I'm going to declare it halfway between, an Imperial Stout and a porter. I think what I tasted was quite a bit of chocolate, but it was effervescent, and but it had, you know, kind of a hoppy quality to it as well, and I think that's what it's kind of having me throw it down that porter, you know, route a little bit as well. It's kind of somewhere in between the two. So my Suds rating on Miles Davis Bitches Brew is going to be 3. Ah, what a relief. How about it, Sean?
This is one I've enjoyed before, and I'm enjoying again, and I'm going to give it a solid 4.
A solid 4, he says. A body should really not make that sound. All right. What did you think about the taste profile of this?
I like it. I mean, for an Imperial Stout, it doesn't beat you up. It just a very easy-to-drink beer, and a lot of complexity that's going on there, just like Bitches Brew. And that's fun to drink, and... That's what beer should be about, right?
Yep, I agree. How about it, Chip? What do you think of Bitches Brew?
I'd give it a 4.
A 4? A body should really not make that sound. So what do you think it hit that mark for?
Well, there is a lot of complexity, but it's well-balanced, I think.
Yes.
Something I can drink more of than just one.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely noticed some difficult availability of this particular collaboration brew, and it's nice that I keep on running into it, you know, periodically. I don't believe that they've made it at Dogfish, you know, very frequently. I don't know if they made one batch and we're just kind of running into some old stock.
This is actually a second batch of it.
So there you go. So that kind of resolves that mystery as they went back and created another round of it. Yeah. So definitely if you see it, I think it's only in the bomber bottles.
That's correct.
It's the only configuration I've seen that in. But Miles Davis Bitches Brew. Excellent. So the last beer we had to chat about is New Albion from Samuel Adams. So I'll confess, I really don't know a whole lot about this beer. I will almost exhaust everything I know about it in about 15 seconds, which is, I know they create this beer because it's in their backyard, and I believe it was an original brew that was made in Boston, and I think they're reclaiming some heritage by making this.
So the history on this is actually more colorful than New Albion's originally, it was the first craft brewery in the United States. And I want to say it was 77, 78 is when they got their start. Jack McAuliffe was the founder. For the homebrewers out there, you'll see references to New Albion all the time. Sierra Nevada credits them as being very inspirational to them getting their brewery.
So this is heading back to the mothership.
This is heading back to the mothership, yes. New Albion is the craft brewery that put us here today.
So that was an insult. So this is reclaiming basically American beer heritage.
Yes.
That's really what this is.
Yeah. And so they went out of business in 82. Like most breweries, they...
1882 or
1982. Okay. Yeah. So needed to expand. None of the banks were willing to give them money because in 82, you have this small microbrewery. What are you talking about? So at some point the trademarks came available, and Jim Koch from Sam Adams knew the importance of those trademarks and didn't want the big brewers to get a hold of them. And so he bought the trademarks, sat on them, did what he had to do to be able to maintain the trademarks. And then recently, the story goes that one of his salesmen, or it's actually a saleswoman, called him up and said, "Hey, I've met this guy that seems to know a lot about beer. His name's Jack McAuliffe, and he said something about New Albion." And Jim's response was, "Put him on the phone." And as a result,
so is that the secret for getting the brewer on the phone? Is just say, "Hey, have you ever heard of New Albion?" And bam, there you go.
Well, so after the brewery closed, Jack kind of moved down to Texas, and he was doing his own thing down there, and kind of went into hiding.
Making beer or not?
Not making beer. I think his background's engineering, and so he was doing engineering things. But what started New Albion was the fact that he had been over in Europe and had tasted all these great European beers and came back to the U.S. and found they weren't available. So he started his own brewery, trying to recreate some of those tasty beers that he had over in Europe. And it's actually completely an accident that he started the American Pale Ale. Cascade hops were brand new at the time, and the story goes Anheuser-Busch wasn't even using them. So that was what he was able to get sold hop-wise, and that's what he brewed his beer with, and that's what started the American Pale Ale.
Huh. So is this a yeast culture that is a base of other beers here in the U.S.? Do you have any idea about that?
Yeah, the yeast itself is specific to New Albion, and it's not. I don't know what the history of that yeast is. The good news is that UC Davis and their phenomenal fermentation and food science program, they've kept a slant of the yeast, so they were able to go back to the original yeast to brew this beer. But most of the comparisons I've seen, like the clone recipes that are in Brew Your Own, they all say like a London Ale yeast is what they suggest. So in that regards, it's definitely British in origins for the yeast.
Huh.
Now, did New Albion have a life after 1982?
No.
Up to the present?
No. It's like I said, Jim Koch would do whatever was necessary to maintain the trademark. But otherwise, no, this is the first time that we're tasting this beer since 1982.
So what is the reliability that we're actually tasting those original yeast components?
According to Jim and Jack...
they swear by it in court.
They swear by it. Yeah,
it was in a little bottle in the back of Jack's, you know, right behind, you know, a margarita mix or something like that. He maintained in his fridge.
Yeah, well, he did. I don't know if they were unopened.
Honey, don't throw that out. That's American beer heritage.
Yeah. Yeah. If anything, the beer should be in the Smithsonian if it isn't already. Yeah.
You know, definitely with that story. All right. So. Really a wonderful story. And I hate to say it, but I like the story better than I like the beer.
So that Chip and I cracked this open the other night, and it was I was taken a little bit aback. And the thing is it's just two-row base malt. It's the yeast, Cascade hops, and then water.
And I think this was probably a diehard session beer that they had, you know, when they first made it. And, you know, when people were paid, you know, in beer... you know, as a wage component, I think that they probably hit the right mark for what I tend to think of would have been that style of beer.
And it's not anything to be blown away by any means, but given the time in history,
this was a game changer. People would drink this and say, "Oh, I don't like this," and then people would drink it and like Ken Grossman from Sierra Nevada and say, "No, this is really good. I like what's going on here." And, you know, what characterizes the American Pale Ale style is Cascade hops, and this is all Cascade hops.
Yep. So my Suds rating for this is going to be 2. Was that a belch? And, you know, I think some of the tasting qualities I had around this were, I don't know, I've had a lot of champagnes that had a very interesting, very similar taste profile. It was earthy, I think, was the other description I had around it. I don't know. I had a very difficult time describing this, more so than I should have. But, Sean, what do you think?
Well, so one of the things I found out, because that night after Chip and I tried our first one, and it was straight out of the cooler, I brought a six-pack home, and it had a chance to warm up a little bit. And once that happened, it opened up a whole new tasting experience. There was a lot of lemony notes. I got some hints of honey. It was a much more enjoyable beer. So my advice to those people out there listening that are drinking this beer,
let it breathe,
let it warm up a little bit, and you're gonna have a really good time drinking it. So as far as my rating goes, I'm gonna say it's a 3.
A 3.
Yes.
Ah, what a relief. Okay. All right. Jeff, how about it, man? What do you think
2.
Of New Albion?
2.
A 2. Was that a belch?
It was. Underwhelmed. Just given the history, I had high expectations going in. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's a pale ale. So I'm like, it's palatable. I'll drink it.
Mm.
But
I need a snack.
It's not what you're going to go for on a...
Nah.
Yeah.
There's many other beers I would pick ahead of that.
Huh. Yeah.
But I like the story, like you said.
I agree. And, you know, I think that's what I like about both Dogfish and Sam Adams is I think that they respect the heritage and the
Absolutely.
Story, you know, behind the beer itself. And so I think that's great what they're doing.
And Sam Adams, I think they handled it well, giving credit where credit's due.
Yes.
You look at that package and I don't see where it says Sam Adams anywhere on there, but...
In very small print, it says,
right.
you so, know, collaboration with Sam
absolutely.
Adams.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's... the other thing is that all of the proceeds are benefiting Jack McAuliffe.
Oh, okay.
So you're helping the original craft brewer. It's my understanding he's had some medical bills. He was in an accident. So this is, you know, credit to Jim Koch for stepping up and...
No, that wasn't a sound effect. That was me.
Credit to Jim Koch for, you know, bringing this beer back, and you know, and this might be the only time we see it, and I'm glad it happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad we had a chance to taste all of these beers today. I really enjoyed going through each and every one of them. Great discussion. Some ground we haven't covered yet. Thank you for joining us here on this Sud segment. This is good old boy Mike.
I'm Sean.
And Chip.
And we will talk to you later. Keep sipping. Bye now.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip Suds and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the good old boys, will see y'all next time.